Welcome to Out in the Bay, queer radio from San Francisco. I'm Christopher Beal. This week, we remember queer music icon Sylvester. What modern-day LGBTQIA stars owe their successes to the work of this queer pioneer? More on Sylvester in about 20 minutes. But up first, we're now just over 2 years into the COVID-19 pandemic, and life is sort of bouncing back and forth between normalcy and bouts of masked caution. We have vaccines now, and things are slowly looking up. But back in April of 2020, right at the beginning of the pandemic, things were very different. The news was filled with nothing but numbers and data and fear. The coverage of folks who had actually contracted COVID-19 in those earliest days were often secondhand. And that kind of bugged me. So when a longtime friend of mine tested positive for COVID-19, I got in touch with him and produced this piece called Activity Found.
My name is Armando Zambrana. I am a human resources manager.
Where'd you grow up?
I grew up in Puerto Rico. I came to the Bay Area the fall of 2013, got a job promotion with the hotel chain that I work with.
In March, Armando and his coworkers were furloughed, meaning they're still employed by the company and still accruing vacation days. They're just not working and not being paid. What do you like to do in your free time?
A big part of my life outside of work is singing with the San Francisco Gay Men's Chorus. I've been doing that since I moved here.
What's your part? What part do you sing?
I am an upper first tenor.
Okay, so what does that mean for someone that might be like a dummy?
So you have the basses that sing the lows of the lowest.
Can't relate.
Kind of like what your voice sounds like. And then I am on the other side of the spectrum.
I wouldn't be exaggerating if I said that 50% of Armando's social life is related to the San Francisco Gay Men's Chorus. And right now, well, that's not happening in person, which has left Armando with a lot of free time. That'll come into play in a second. Just a couple of days after Armando was furloughed, he was sitting at home when his phone rang.
They said, "We are really bored."
It was some of Armando's friends, a couple who were also recently furloughed.
"We want to go out and drive around and get some food."
You have to understand something about Armando. He's a social butterfly. He's always out doing something, doesn't like being at home. And on this night, he allowed loneliness, boredom, and probably hunger to cloud his judgment.
"Let's go get some food."
So Armando's friends picked him up and they went directly to the nearest drive-thru.
By that point, they weren't allowing that many people into parks and things like that. So literally we parked next to a cemetery, isolated, you know, on the street, and we ate our food in there.
The guys finished their food and then thought about what to do with the rest of their night.
They said, "Let's drive around. Let's go to Santa Cruz."
They hit the road, headed south, passing Daly City, San Mateo, Redwood City, Palo Alto on the way. And it was somewhere in there that the conversation turned to COVID-19, when one of the friends said,
"You know, so-and-so just tested positive for COVID, and we just saw them last week." I'm like, "What?" And the other guy goes, "Oh, holy crap, like, yeah." And I'm like, "And why are we doing this?" And of course, there's just the three of us, none of us have symptoms, so I was not wearing a mask. That was the only time that I did not wear a mask. I was not careful.
It's proof that one time's all it really takes.
Yeah. I'm still a little bit upset that they put me into that situation, but at the same time, I decided to get in the car with them. I'm not claiming to be innocent, but if I would have known that they were exposed to this, I would not have gone.
Exactly 1 week after Armando was furloughed, he started feeling symptoms. Just 3 days after that road trip.
That's when the fever started, but it wasn't an extreme fever. It's funny because I had a fever back in February that had me in bed. But this fever wasn't like that. So the fever would come and go, then muscle aches started to come. And then by the third day, I had like pain on my lower back, but not a pain that, oh, I picked something that was too heavy for me and I hurt my back. It was just in that general area. I couldn't even sleep with the pain.
At this point, none of Armando's symptoms were really giving him red flags for COVID-19. He had a fever, some headaches, body soreness, diarrhea, but none of those trademark COVID-19 respiratory effects. Then Armando heard that one of those two friends he was in the car with the other night was showing symptoms of COVID-19.
And they said, we have an appointment on Monday to get tested. And he helped me go online. He did it for me and he got an appointment.
In the meantime, the symptoms continued to intensify, especially the dizziness.
I was really excited to be cooking for myself. And I said, you know, I'm going to go get some burgers and onions and all of this. I'm going to go shopping. I was feeling energetic that day.
Armando remembers arriving at the grocery store.
I get the basket and I just stand there like, where the hell am I? And for like a good 15 seconds, I was just like, holy shit, like, where am I? My senses came back, but I'm very dizzy. I got everything that I needed.
Back at his apartment, Armando starts cooking his burgers, taking his time to prepare all of the little ingredients.
With onions, tomato, everything.
After putting everything together, he sat down and took his first triumphant bite, only to realize,
I can't taste anything. I'm like, oh my God, I'm definitely sick.
Monday morning, Armando's friends picked him up for their testing appointment.
I'm like, okay, I'm gonna get in the car with them. I'm gonna wear my mask. We're gonna go get tested.
The group drove to San Mateo, about 25 minutes south of San Francisco, the site of Project Baseline's testing facility.
That was a drive-through. You had to sit in the car. They're holding up signs and they're telling you, roll your window when we tell you. We show our ID. We show this link that you get in the mail. Then you drive to another set of like nurses and stuff. And she explains to you what she's going to do. And then she asks you to roll down the window. And then she went through each window. I was sitting in the back and she did all of us.
What exactly do these tests entail? Well, according to UC Davis, they're performed by, quote, inserting a 6-inch long swab, like a long Q-tip, into the cavity between the nose and mouth for 15 seconds.
Really far back.
Rotating said swab several times.
And you have zero control because if you move, you can hurt yourself because that shit is shoving that in there.
The swab is then inserted into a container and sent to a lab for testing.
If the tests are positive, we're going to call you. If not, we're going to email you.
Did it hurt?
No, it wasn't painful, but it was a weird sensation more than anything. More, it was uncomfortable and ticklish, but it wasn't painful.
You're listening to Out in the Bay, queer radio from San Francisco. I'm Christopher Beal. While Armando waited for his test results, his condition continued to worsen. More on what Armando went through is coming up as we revisit this story from April of 2020. If you enjoy the LGBTQIA-focused interviews and stories you hear here on Out in the Bay, please consider making a donation. Out in the Bay is a nonprofit production, and we're totally listener-supported. More info at outinthebay.org.
My heart starts beating so fast Wednesday night.
Okay, so it's early 2020, and Armando is showing symptoms of something.
Really, 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 really fast.
He went to a drive-through COVID-19 testing site, and now we find him at home waiting for the results.
I get this numbness all over my body. My legs are falling numb. I have a hard time getting up. I'm like, oh my God, this is it. I'm gonna die. For the first time, I felt like I needed to go to the hospital. Everything else was going numb.
So Armando calls a friend to come take him to the emergency room.
While she's coming, I start cleaning my apartment. I threw away everything that was naughty because in my head, I said, I'm not going to make it out of this. My mom is going to have to come and claim my stuff, and she's going to see all of this. But at the same time, I'm thinking things like, okay, I need to dye pretty, so I need to do my hair. So I did my hair. Like, I'm freaking out, but I'm very conscious because I'm making decisions. Like, I'm like, okay, my apartment has to be clean. I have to look cute if I'm going to be in a bed or whatever's going to happen. I have to look cute. So my friend comes. By the time she arrived, I told her, like, my heart is going back to normal. Like, I'm not freaking out anymore. The numbness, it's still there, but it's not as bad. So she gave me chamomile tea. She stayed with me until like 2 a.m, and then I was fine.
By Thursday morning, Armando can neither taste nor smell. His stomach's upset, and he's dizzy.
At around 9 o'clock Thursday night, I get an email from this, it's called the Project Baseline, that I got tested with. And I'm like, yay, I got an email. Not a phone call, but an email. So I open up my email and I get the results. You have like influenza, then you had pneumonia, and then you had like the last one was SARS, COVID, and that one, it said activity found.
Meaning Armando was positive for COVID-19.
Project Baseline, I guess, is based out of New York. So I got a phone call from this New York nurse. She was asking a lot of questions. She was asking, where have you been? When did you go there? When did you feel what? You need to call these people and let them know that they might be, you know, infected. It was like an STD test. So the nurse goes, when was your last fever? And I said, last Friday. And she goes, oh, that's great. You should be able to go back to normal activities. And I'm like, what? In my head, I'm like, I just tested positive Monday. Here we are Thursday, and you're telling me that because I haven't had a fever, that I'm okay to return to normal activities. If I was working, that means that I would go back to work tomorrow. Are you sure that I'm okay? She goes, yes. I'm like, what? How is that possible?
The second call Armando would get was from another nurse who only had two questions.
Is your face purple and do you feel confusion? And I said, no, nothing is purple, but I do feel very confused. And I don't know if confusion is the right word. I feel the same way that I feel when I have a good buzz going on, but it's freaking me out because I am not drunk.
So that's the only medical professionals you heard from after your diagnosis?
Yes. Yes.
What do you make of when you see these stories on the news of people defying stay-at-home orders and throwing parties and protests and rallies and worse, calling this disease a hoax? Like, what goes through your head when you see this flash across your screen every day?
It's crazy that people are doing that. And I get it. I get it. I haven't worked in a month, and believe me that I want to go back to normal. I know it's not a hoax because it wasn't a normal flu. You don't get dizzy. You don't all of a sudden get up and think you're going to die and you start cleaning your apartment because you know that in your head, in that state of mind, you're going to die. The flu is not going to make your hands or your legs numb to the point that you can barely walk or you can barely get dressed. What I felt was very different than what I have ever felt before. And I'm one of the lucky ones. I feel very lucky that it didn't go further than that. I drink my vitamin C every day, my supplements.
So you're a generally healthy person going into this.
Oh, yeah.
Very active.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I mean, it put you down for the count. So imagine what it can do for someone. Exactly. Less healthy.
Yeah. It did. It really did.
What would you say to someone listening to this who is just utterly terrified?
They have reason to be scared. It's affecting people so differently. And that is a scary thing. And I'm sorry, I wish I had better news, but you just need to take care of yourself and follow the guidelines that they're offering, just because this thing is so unpredictable.
Are you nervous about any long-term health effects from this?
Yes. Yes. So one thing that I heard about, that I read about this, is the scars on your lungs and your lung capacity decreasing because of that. And that is one thing that scares me a little bit. I'm scared for the scars that apparently this is leaving behind and what else this has damaged. For example, that weird pain that I was feeling in my lower back. I don't know if it was my kidneys. I don't know what it was. You know, when I was getting very dizzy, and what was that all about?
Johns Hopkins University backs up what Armando said about lung scarring, by the way, but also adds that, quote, milder cases are less likely to cause lasting scars in the lung tissue, unquote. That could be good news for Armando, who's feeling a lot better today. Most of his symptoms have subsided.
I got really excited because this morning I woke up, I put my nose inside of the coffee jar, and I was able to smell a little bit. I was like, cool. Oh, this is so good. But then I pour it and I drank it, and then it didn't taste like anything. So there's a hint in there that is starting to come back. And it's been 4 weeks.
But today you're feeling good?
I'm feeling good today. I'm feeling good. I just need to be able to taste my food. Yeah.
Well, while we're on the topic, once you're able to taste again, what's the first thing you're going to eat?
Oh, my God. Probably fried chicken. Probably fried chicken.
That sounds amazing, yeah. Actually.
Yeah.
Well, I think you have a really cool story, and I thank you for sharing it with me.
Oh, you're welcome. Thanks for reaching out.
Armando has since moved from San Francisco to a different part of California on a beach, and he's doing great. You got a net? You're listening to Out in the Bay, queer radio from San Francisco. I'm Christopher Beal, and I want to thank Devin Katayama, Adam Vargas, and Lewis Goldberg for the edits on that piece. I released that 2 years ago on my podcast Unpacked, which you can find at unpackedpodcast.com. How far we've come since then. Up next on Out in the Bay, we revisit Marilyn Pittman's 2005 portrait of a late, great San Francisco queer icon. As you'll learn, a lot of the mainstream drag that we see today was inspired by her. In this piece, Marilyn chats with Josh Gamson, who wrote the biography The Fabulous Sylvester.
Who should be thanking him artistically?
RuPaul. RuPaul does directly thank Sylvester. There are people carrying on the tradition like RuPaul. I saw Kevin Aviance in New York give a performance of Do You Want to Funk that was amazing, just amazing, of his own, but his own interpretation of Sylvester.
Don't you think it's fun that we're calling Sylvester he, and that, you know, he maintained his identity? He pioneered androgyny.
He did, and a lot of people still remember Sylvester as she. And Sylvester, on any given day, might be she. So it wasn't just androgyny, it was fluidity. It was, you know, who am I today? How male am I today? How female am I today? And, you know, one of the things I noticed writing the book is that interviewing people, some people say she did this, she did that consistently the whole way through the conversation. Other people say he consistently. And others just go back and forth depending on the story they're telling.
So during the Watts riots, I understand Sylvester was out looting. What was she looting? He looting?
Well, he was a member of a sort of sorority gang called the Discotes. And their main goal was to be fabulous and to party and to dress. And during the Watts riots, Sylvester said when everybody else was looting for TVs and stuff, they were stealing makeup and wigs and lipstick. He said just the fun stuff. And that was his life back then.
He was from South Central.
He was from South Central. I mean, they were partying in Watts.
Josh Gampson, the author of The Fabulous Sylvester, a biography of the late great San Francisco disco diva. You're listening to Out in the Bay. I'm Marilyn Pittman. Josh reads from his book about the early days when Sylvester was known as Dooney.
One day in 1968, in their heyday, a gaggle of discotes was hanging out at the Clowns, a club on Jefferson where they often met. Dooney was nowhere to be found. He'd said he would be there. He'd told them that morning, "Get ready for me." You knew what that meant in a general sense. It was both a promise and a warning, but you simply couldn't predict the specifics. Once, "get ready" had meant a dress made entirely of paper, the first in a long series of disposable one-nighter outfits. For the first ever Watts Summer Festival in 1966, Dooney had stapled together aluminum pie tins into matching dresses for him and Tiki, another discote, and Tammy had made styrofoam earrings to match. When they walked through the festival, people were drawn, confused and squinting in the sun, to the blinding silver light that turned out to be Tiki and Dooney. Another time Dooney had appeared in a knit dress, bright lipstick, and nail polish, and a Batman belt, and once in a baby doll dress, windowpane stockings and square-toed big-buckled pilgrim shoes, his hair in Beatles bangs with so many curls on top that his head looked like a chocolate fountain. He could wear a full-length sequined gown or two odd-shaped pieces of fabric glued together just so. He was known to have worn a snazzy dress cinched with a big, wide camping belt into which were stuck a knife, fork, spoon, and canteen. With Dooney, says Diana Discote, it was always an ongoing saga. What's she going to do next? Dooney would come on a pogo stick. It didn't matter. She was her only competition because nobody was on her level. Dooney could always walk away with the spotlight, honey, without even making a big deal out of it. Sometimes, Tiki says, it seemed as if Dooney had come from outer space. Legend has it that he once won a prize at a ball wearing a sheet, a rose, and angel hair from a Christmas tree, and all he did was twirl the rose and spin around.
What was your favorite part of your book to write?
There are three parts that I think were really my favorites. One was the discotes, because I didn't know anything about his background in L.A., and the surviving discotes are just wonderful, and the stories that they told, I was just screaming. I was just dying laughing. I mean, it was just fun to hear it, and fun for them to remember it, and fun to write it. And then I enjoyed writing the period of time where he hit. There's just something about a moment of breakthrough and success that's fun to write about.
Sylvester popped into stardom with suddenness and force, like an ember that has smoked for a while and then without warning ignited. For a few minutes, his life became one of those Stars Born, oh my god, that's my song movie montages. As a child, he had no doubt imagined it all something like this, corny and glamorous, maybe sketched out the scenes on a notepad. The song begins, and here's Sylvester staring at the portable radio in his laundromat, screaming and throwing his socks in the air. Cut to the tinny speakers of an Audi, and then to Sylvester driving in a beret, grinning to himself. Cut to Sylvester signing autographs on the streets of San Francisco, a large ring flickering and bracelets shivering. Cut to sweaty men dancing, eyes closed, fists up, and shirtless. Cut to Sylvester arriving at a gig in New York City in dark Jackie O sunglasses while bodyguards hold back reaching hands. Cut to Sylvester in a radio interview, both wearing headphones, their heads thrown back in laughter. Cut to the Billboard charts, dates flapping by as the song shoots up the charts. Cut to ABC Sunday Night Football going to commercial as fans dance to Mighty Reel.
Thank you.
Feeling real is an interesting notion, and a lot more was packed into that little song than Sylvester's simple lyrics let on.
Josh Gamson reading from his book, The Fabulous Sylvester.
They don't need them juries. They don't need that hair. These women can sing, y'all. Now, folks say seeing is believing. Right? I done told you everything I could tell you. Now it's their turn to tell you. Mama, you've been around. Girl, I know that you've been around. I've been around, and you were here all the time. I've been searching,
reconstruct the pre-AIDS San Francisco scene beautifully. Can you describe a little bit about that, how our world was here in San Francisco, pre-AIDS, with Sylvester in it?
There's an innocence to it that people describe of discovering freedom and discovering sexual freedom and throwing off shame and the excitement of throwing off shame. Just the energy that comes out of you, too. I mean, I think that's what a lot of the dancing was about. It was just dancing, celebrating what it feels like not to have so much shame around you.
And that's why we call it gay pride.
Yeah, I mean, the old kind of gay pride. Not the Miller Beer gay pride. The pride in the pride that takes work to get to, kind of. I think there was also it just sounds like it was a lot of fun. You know, it was depraved and fun.
You've been listening to Out in the Bay, queer radio from San Francisco. You can catch up on past episodes, get in touch, or sign up for our email newsletter. You can also make a donation at outinthebay.org. Your donation helps us keep bringing queer air to your ears. Out in the Bay is a nonprofit independent production, which means we get no financial support from the radio stations that air Out in the Bay every week, not from NPR, not from podcast platforms. We rely on listener support from people like you and like Brad Payton and Richard Merck of Silicon Valley. Thank you for your support. And Melissa Hawkins in San Francisco. Thanks also to KALW 91.7 FM in the San Francisco Bay Area and San Francisco Public Press and its radio station KSFP 102.5 FM for broadcasting Out in the Bay every week. Our email address is outinthebay@yahoo.com. That's outinthebay@yahoo.com. Our executive producer is Eric Jansen. And just a quick update on Eric. He is recovering really well from his surgery and is still working with the team behind the scenes here at Out in the Bay. He'll be back on the air soon and says that he misses you. Our theme music was written and performed by Holly Mead. I produced this episode and engineered it. I'm Christopher Beale. Until next time, thanks for joining me out in the Bay.